and thanks for tuning into Stable Connections, the podcast. Today's interview is with Marissa Nielsen, and she talks to us about starting Pony Club around 8 years old with her mom, her experience going from Pony Club to Young Riders, traveling to England and to Scotland, and what it was like moving her business from the Bay Area to Sacramento, California. Hope you enjoy. Stable Connections is sponsored by Horse on the Loose. Horse on the Loose is a Los Angeles-based equestrian brand featuring accessories for the stylish equestrian. All of their artwork is created by sisters Andra and Roxana, who are passionate about all things equestrian. Find designs with a modern aesthetic on their Made in America throw blankets, belts, hats, and riding socks. Visit www.horseontheloose.com to see what they have to offer. Stable Connections is sponsored by Horsewomanship Media. Horsewomanship Media offers soulful social media management for animal-centric businesses. Please visit jshorsewomanship.com or Instagram at horsewomanship_media.
So first off, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Nice to meet you. Horses came into my life when I was pretty little. So I grew up in Half Moon Bay, so on the coast, and horses are becoming few and far in between in, you know, any of those coastal towns. But there used to be quite a few horses in my area where I grew up. My family did not have horse property and they pretty much knew nothing about horses. My mom had a horse when she was a teenager that her parents had bought, and she used to ride around bareback, and that was pretty much it. So we have a family house up in Lake Tahoe, and my parents would take us up there for the summer, and they signed me up for pony camp. So I went to pony camp, and I was pretty much hooked from there. So one of my good friends in school, her mom was the DC of our local pony club. And so we knew that they had horses, and her mom rode, and her older sister rode, and she rode. And I was like, oh, that's, we should talk to her.
Yeah, let's be friends with them.
Yeah, exactly. So my mom talked to her and is like, all right, Marissa wants to ride horses. How are we going to do this? How are we going to get started? So we went down and signed up for our local pony club. Luckily for us, Pony Club teaches you everything from the ground up, because otherwise I don't think we would have survived, because even though my mom did have a horse, she knew nothing about horses. She knew that you know, had to feed it some hay and
give it some water sometimes.
Give it some water, and that's about it.
The survival.
Yeah, exactly. So we started reading the D manual in Pony Club. So this was, I was in third grade, so I don't know however old you are, like eight or
something like
nine,
that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So we started reading the D manual in Pony Club. We learned how to put on a halter. We learned how to lead a horse. We learned two signs of colic, three reasons why you should call the vet, you know, all of those good kinds of things.
It's fun to learn alongside with your mom,
yeah,
as well.
So we sort of just joined and started learning the things. Then I don't know how long after, but pretty shortly after, our friend told us, oh, hey, we know of this pony or this horse for lease down the street, so maybe you should lease that horse and you could start riding in Pony Club. We were like, okay, great. We know how to put on a halter and three reasons to call the vet, so we definitely should lease a horse,
We've
right?
got this.
So we leased this psychotic white Arabian, you know.
First horse is perfect.
Yes, how most kids start, you know, the perfect first horse. It lived down the street from the Pony Club arena. We would tack it up and walk up the street and have some lessons. And the instructors thought that it was, like, not really a suitable horse. But I thought it was fine. I really liked it. I was like, no, I think it's great. And then my friend, whose mom was in charge of the Pony Club, her older sister, who was quite a bit older than us, they were like, oh, why don't you let her ride it to see if it's appropriate? Well, the horse, like, bolted down the street with her, ran all the way down the street through the neighborhood and like dumped her in somebody's front lawn. And they were like, yeah, you can't ride this horse anymore. We were like, oh shoot. Okay. So what are we going to do next? So then my mom went out and found another horse for us to lease that was much better. So we rode that one for a while, but it still was a little bit wild, and we would have to go and like lunge it before I rode it. But again, I was still pretty little, like in third grade, so my mom had to lunge it, but she didn't really know how to lunge it, so, you know, it was the whole thing.
Not
so,
a good fit again.
No, yeah. So we found a good pony, and then my pony club career kind of took off from that. So we finally found, our third time's a charm, we found a great pony. He lived in somebody's backyard. He had been ridden by a bunch of kids in pony club, and my best friend at the time and I, we would take the bus from school, and it would drop us off. We would walk down the street. We would walk to where my pony lived. We would, the two of us in third grade and fourth grade, would tack him up together. And then we would ride him up the street to the pony club arena. Her mom was an artist, and her art studio was on the top of the barn at the pony club arena and like looked out over the arena. So then we would tack up her horse once we got there, and then we would go ride in the arena, and she would be lightly supervising us from her art studio. And I rode all up and down through the hills. We rode to the beach. We rode to the grocery store. We would tie our horses up and go in the store and buy candy and ride back home and gallop through the hills. And that was kind of my start to riding. So I did that from about, I don't know, third grade to sixth grade. And then we were riding with a trainer at the time in Pony Club. She's now a big time dressage trainer in Santa Rosa area. But back then she was, you know, young and just getting her start teaching people. She said, oh, hey, I have this, you know, off the track thoroughbred. He's like 4 years old and he's untrained. I think he would be a wonderful first horse for you to buy, right? Uh-huh. And my mom, knowing nothing, was like, well, if the trainer tells us, then I guess we should do it, right? Uh-huh. So my mom spent a whopping $3,500 on this 4 or 5 year old off the track thoroughbred that was horrible. He dumped me every single day. And I used to come home and my mom would be like, oh, how was your lesson? I'd be like, I only fell off twice today. It was such a great lesson.
That's great that it didn't induce fear in you.
No. So I think that that's when my mom knew that she was screwed and I was in it for life, because I did not run away crying and I thought it was awesome. And I kept going to shows. Half the time I would go to a show and I would get eliminated because I couldn't even get through the start flags to get to the first jump before my time was up. And I would be eliminated for not even
going to the first jump.
And I'd be like, oh man, I didn't even get over the first jump this time. Sometimes I could get over like one jump or two jumps, but this went on for a long time, too long, a year or two. And we finally found a new trainer and we moved into a training barn. She said she was going to help us somewhat fixed him, but basically told us we needed to get rid of him and get a different horse. So mm-hmm.
At the time when that would happen, because it sounds pretty consistently like you'd move to somebody else and then they'd say, hey, maybe you need a different fit.
Yeah.
What were the feelings within that?
I was too young. I don't know. I just, you know, I knew at that point that I would like to go jump some jumps and not just do like 500 circles around the start flags.
So you recognize that maybe this person is correct and that it's not working the way you're trying to do it.
Yeah, that maybe it was the horse, maybe it was me. I didn't know, but that something needed to happen. So we finally ended up at a place and we sold that horse and we leased a couple horses from some friends and got more serious. I had taken the not very good horse to a bunch of, I did do some rated 3-day events, but mostly pony club shows. We had a lot of pony club shows down in San Luis Obispo. There was a wonderful ranch down there that hosted tons of pony club stuff. So we went down there.
What does a pony club show look like?
Well, back then it was different. Now pony club is really branched out. You know, you can go all the way through the pony club levels without even riding. Now you can do the horsemanship track, you can do a dressage track, you can do the traditional eventing track, you can do a hunt scene equitation track, we even have western tracks. But back then when I was in pony club, it was eventing that, you know, to go through the levels. You had to do dressage, cross country, show jumping. So we did have some, like there would be dressage rally and there would be show jumping rally, but most of the time for a pony club show it was 3-day eventing.
All three. Is, yeah. Did Pony Club, do you know if they went that route because it was more broad?
Well, Pony Club originated in England, and pretty much in England, everyone, you know, 3-day eventing was kind of the original thing. And, you know, they now have jumpers in England, and they have hunters, like fox hunt, you know, not the same as our show hunters here in the United States.
Not hunter jumpers, yeah, like fox hunting.
Yeah, exactly. So the Pony Club model came from England, and so I think most people in England evented and did the traditional 3-day eventing like that, so.
Yeah. And at the time, so now I'm guessing you're like middle school, high school.
Yeah.
And was the thought, you want to be a horse trainer, you want to be in the horse industry, like was there any of that thought?
Yeah, for sure. I always thought from a little age that I wanted to be a trainer. Unfortunately, I wish that I had some bigger dreams of doing something else, but that's kind of always what I wanted to do. I leased some horses. My parents finally bought me a nice 3-day event horse when I was 14. I had already competed through preliminary level on some of my leased horses and started to do young riders. So I grew up through the whole Pony Club and then sort of branched out from Pony Club to young riders with Area 6, which is like California eventing. And I had been to young rider championships twice already as a groom, not riding, but just like taking it in. And when I went to young rider championships, that was pretty eye-opening. Like, I had seen the eventing, but I didn't realize that, you know, 15-year-olds also did Grand Prix dressage and also did like meter 40 jumpers. And so going to young riders, I was like, holy smokes, there's like a whole world out there that I don't even know about, that I've been living in my little shell thinking that eventing and Pony Club is the only thing that exists.
Was that thought exciting or daunting?
Exciting. Like, I just always wanted to learn, and I was like, wow, I want to jump big jumps like that in the arena too, and I want to be able to do dressage like that. And to me, actually, back then, I thought it made event, you know, any dressage people or show jumping people you'll talk to will say that eventers are crazy and that they would never dream of doing that. But me, I was the opposite. I thought they were crazy. I was like, oh my gosh, how could you jump that big? I want to do that. It seems like that makes eventing look easy. So I really wanted to get some more information on that. So when I was like 15 or 16, we ended up moving. We had the nice horse, but we were like very backyardy in Half Moon Bay. Like, my horse lived in my friend's backyard, and same thing, we rode, you know, I had to ride like 20 minutes. I had to tack him up, ride on the side of the roads like 20 minutes up to the Pony Club arena to go have a lesson. And most of my riding was still through the trails. I would just go gallop through the flower fields. So we decided that if we were going to do this and we wanted to go to young riders and be serious and be competitive, we needed to be in a more competitive barn. So we ended up moving into the Portola Valley area, and we moved to, there's a big facility called the Portola Valley Training Center, and there's like, I don't even know, maybe 500 horses on the property there. And there was like serious dressage people, Grand Prix jumpers, like all kinds of, you know.
Anything you could.
Yeah, imagine. Everything was there at that facility. And so I was like, whoa, this is cool. So we went to train there, and I ended up being a working student. And I was a working student there for that trainer from the time I was 15 until I was like 18 when I graduated high school. So then when I was 18, she said, you know, you should go to England, you should be a working student, you should go. And my parents were gonna buy me a horse, and we had one horse that we bought off a video from New Zealand that ended up not really working out for me, but we ended up selling him for a bunch of money. An eventer who went to the Olympics saw him, and I rode in a clinic with her, and she thought he was going to be her next Olympic horse and paid me a bunch of money for him. So my parents were like, okay, well, you could go to Europe. And my trainer at the time had been buying a bunch of horses from England. So my parents were like, you can go to England and buy a horse with that money that you got from the other horse. And I was like, okay, great. So after I graduated high school, I set off to go to England. And
what was the initial feeling on that? Just excitement?
Yeah, like I was super excited. I was going to go be a working student. I've always been pretty independent. And my mom was like, oh, do you want me to go with you? I was like, nope. Like, so I got on the plane. I flew across the country. I had never been out of the country before. I went to meet with the sales agent. You know, I took a taxi from the airport, found the hotel. The sales agent picked me up the next morning. We went for like the next four, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. We looked at like 50 horses.
They're 18 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We took some
confidence.
Yeah. Took video. I mean, the sales agent is the one who my trainer had bought a bunch of horses through. So
there,
like,
was trust involved.
Yeah. So she trusted her, and she had spoken with my trainer and kind of knew like what we were looking for. And she had already scouted out all the horses and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
But still, even just not wanting somebody, your mom, your trainer, anybody, and you're like, no, I can do this.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know why the trainer didn't go with me, but it was never even an option. It was always just like, yeah, you go ahead.
She probably knew you had it.
I guess. So we kind of traveled all over, and I found this horse that I wanted to buy. So we vetted him and we bought the horse, and then I was supposed to be a working student at a big place in England. So we vetted the horse, and then the sales agent took me over to drop me off for my working student thing. And then as soon as all the money cleared and everything, I was going to have the horse shipped over to where I was working. Turns out when I got there, the head groom had been sleeping with the the husband that owned the place. And they had decided to, like, she had decided to tell everybody, like, on the day that I arrived. So, needless to say, shit was hitting the fan. And
right when you arrived.
Yeah, right when I arrived, the first day. So, I ended up, there was a girl there that rented, like, a stable in the back. And she was like, hey, I'm going to go up to Scotland to 2 weeks for this show. Like, I don't have a groom. Do you want to come and groom for me for 2 weeks? And I was like, yeah, that'd be great.
Give me something to
do. Then I can get out of here. So I went up to Scotland. I groomed for her for 2 weeks.
Did your horse come with you?
Oh, no. So he was still, like, we were still waiting for funds to clear and, you know, all that stuff. So I called the guy that I bought him from, and I was like, hey, can he just stay with you for a little bit? And he was like, yeah, no problem. So I went to Scotland. The whole time I was there, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. I decided I did not want to go back to the place that I was supposed to work.
Yep.
So I called the guy again that I had bought the horse from, and I was like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you just stay there for a while? And he's like, well, why don't you come work for me? And I was like, oh, okay, well, sure, that'd be great.
Yep.
So it turns out he was super awesome. He was a young trainer. He was, I don't know, 24 or 25 at the time. And he did both show jumping and eventing. So he had come from a show jumping background. He worked for a silver medalist show jumper and had kind of just recently branched into eventing. So when I went to Europe, I realized that my show jumping skills were definitely not up to par. And so being able to really broaden my horizon in the show jumping world was really beneficial for me. I think that was kind of what I needed at the time. So we traveled to a bunch of international show jumping shows, as well as to some big events. And the horse that I had bought, he had qualified for the Young Event Horse Finals at Burley. And since I was now working for him and I didn't take the horse to the other place, he was like, hey, well, why don't we ride the horse and take it to Burley? And I was like, sure, okay. So we went to the Young Event Horse Finals at Burley, and that was a whole experience in itself. And
is that kind of like a huge show? I don't know much about that.
Yeah, back then it was a 4-star, now it's a 5-star. So it's one of the biggest 5-stars in the world, and they have all kinds of little shows within the show, so it's not just the 5-star. And the Young Event Horse Finals is a huge deal for all of the people in England and in Europe. And they really pride themselves on producing quality young horses. And the finals was nothing like I had ever seen here in the United States. Like, I'm so used to everyone's like, oh, shh, be quiet. Don't spook the horse. Don't make any noise. And we go to the finals, and you have to do like a gallop because they're evaluating if your young horse is going to be potentially a 5-star horse in the future, right? That's the whole point of it. So they want to see the gallop. That's really important. So they go to do the gallop, and everyone stands up out of their seats and is screaming. Like, they're playing like disco music, like super loud.
Get your heart pumping.
Yeah, and everyone's screaming and yelling and clapping. They're waving plastic bags and like cheering. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, the first time you experienced that, you're probably like, guys.
Yeah, I'm like, what is happening here? And they're like, oh no, we like to make the horses spook and gallop really fast. And I'm like, oh no. So that was quite the experience. Yeah, so we did that and then went back to his farm and just, you know, trained and rode, and that was super awesome.
And was the plan to eventually come back to the States, or you were just,
Yeah, that was always the plan. I was just there kind of, you know, temporarily to do a little working student stint and
get some experience.
Yeah, see Europe and see how it is. And
still with the idea of being a trainer.
Yeah. And so then I moved back and brought the horse back with me. And it turned out that the horse did not want to jump into the water. So it's kind of hard to be an event horse if you don't want to jump into the water.
Did you not do that at all overseas?
I did, but he was pretty young. Like, he hadn't done much. And then once he came here, he just did not want to do it. And so I was like, you know what? He's a really good show jumper. My show jumping skills suck. Let's do this and get better. And I liked the horse, so I decided I was going to just show jump for a while and see if I could up my skills. And that was right around the time where show jumping was like starting to be influential in the three-day eventing. Eventing has gone through quite the evolution. Like, when I was a kid, our dressage was atrocious. The show jumping was not big. It was not complicated. And, you know, obviously that has all changed quite a bit now. So I thought, okay, let's really get better at this. So I worked for a guy in Half Moon Bay for a little while with the horse, and then I had a couple injuries. I broke my leg and I smashed my face, and you know,
tell me more about smashing your face.
Well, so side note, at the time I was also working on a big quarter horse ranch, so I had my nice horse and I was trying to do part-time college, making money working on this quarter horse ranch. And so I rode on a drill team. We were, if you're familiar at all with California, the Cow Palace used to be a huge rodeo. We were sponsored by the Cow Palace, and we would go around to rodeos and do this drill team routine to like try to make people come to the Cow Palace rodeo. And we would hand out flyers and carry flags.
Almost like a cheerleading team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Carry flags that said Cow Palace. I had been doing a lot of Western and rodeo and working on this ranch. Oddly enough, both of my kind of major injuries were on quarter horses, not on eventing horses, not jumping, not doing any of the dangerous things that I did on a daily basis. So I was getting on a horse for drill team practice, and like, I had one foot in the stirrup and I was swinging up into the saddle, and he just went crazy and bucked like crazy and dumped me face first into the gravel, and then like tried to kill me after that, like stomped on me a bunch of times and like
Oh god. So yeah. What did you initially like break, or what happened within that?
So I just knocked out some teeth, like ripped open my lip and my whole face and everything, and like all my, like where your gums attach on your teeth, like ripped all my gums.
Oof.
So I ended up having like, I don't know, 98 stitches in my lip and had to get some plastic surgery on my lip to get it all fixed.
Were you scared at the time when that happened?
I mean, I don't know. I guess I was kind of out of it. I didn't really know what was happening.
Yeah.
But I had broken my leg the year prior, also on a quarter horse, and I was just cantering around, and it just slipped and fell down on top of me and smashed my leg in the saddle.
Ooh.
And I had to have a couple surgeries for my leg, so I hadn't really been riding my jumper horse that much, and he was sort of sitting in the field hanging out, not doing a whole lot. So after I kind of recovered from both of those injuries, then I decided I was going to get serious and get back into it. So I went out and found two World Cup show jumpers that were in Woodside, and they had just moved their business. One of them had just gotten divorced, and the other one, you know, was the reason that he got divorced. And so they had just opened shop in Woodside, and I called them up on like the first week they were there, and I was like, hey, like, I need a job and I need someone to ride with. And they were like, great, like, we have one client and three horses and we just moved here, so come on down. So that ended up being really awesome. I learned so much from them. I mean, he had ridden, you know, World Cup jumpers. He had been to the Olympics jumping, and then I traveled the World Cup circuit with them, like grooming and helping and showing my own horse along the way, but, you know, kind of basically doing all your working student stuff. So I always took my horse and showed, but I helped them prep their top horses and learned just so much about big time show jumping and met a lot of people and learned all the tricks of the trade and
exactly what you want a working student position to be.
Yeah, for sure. And I learned a lot about how to run your business, how to not run your business, a lot of the ins and outs of the industry. And, you know, I had been in the eventing industry, but it is very different from the hunter jumper industry. And so I learned a lot about the hunter jumper industry, which has served me well throughout my career now. So that was pretty great.
And so when did you take the leap to do your own thing?
I took, like, I don't know, I think my mom jokes and says I took 10 years to graduate college. I don't know if it was actually 10, but I worked for them. I was going to shows. I bartended at night to make money and pay all my bills.
And what were you studying in college?
I have a double major in history and political science. So I had started out, I was going to be a business major because I thought that would help me the most with running my horse business, because I always knew I wanted to be a horse trainer. But my mom was really adamant that I should go to college. My brother was a really elite level ski racer, and he had a major injury. He broke his back and had a spinal cord injury and was partially paralyzed. And it was sort of like a wake-up call to me, like, oh wow, this sport really is dangerous. And my mom always said, even if you're going to be a horse trainer, you need to go to college because you need to have a backup. You need to have something. I was kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever. But after that happened to my brother, I was kind of like, whoa, okay.
She might be right.
She's really right. Like, in one instant, something could happen that's going to change your whole life.
And it could even not be horse related.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But having a physical job as a horse trainer,
yeah,
you can't do it if you're physically broken.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, okay, she's right. I need to have a backup. If anything happens to my body that makes me not able to ride horses, I need to at least be able to say I have a college degree.
So you chose history.
Yeah. So I was going to do business. I'm horrible at math. I have tons of learning disabilities. I'm super dyslexic. I cannot memorize anything to save my life. And I just couldn't get through the math. So they ended up saying, they were like, okay, because you have all these learning disabilities, we'll give you a special dispensation. And if you take three, like, I forget what it was, like language classes, and your major is something that doesn't have math in the major, we'll take those language classes in place of your math classes.
Oh, wow.
For your requirements, and you can get your degree. So I was like, yep, sold. Great. What doesn't have math in it? Okay, history.
Hopefully you liked history
I did. I liked history. I liked political science. I had some great teachers and ended up getting my degree in that.
And so you graduated college, and then what did life look like?
So then I was still working, but then I had been teaching. So all this whole time, you know, I was always still super involved with Pony Club. Part of Pony Club is that you teach. And so as I was, you know, in my later teenage years, trying to get my upper level ratings for Pony Club, like my B and my HA and my A ratings, you have to teach. So I had always taught Pony Club, and I had a pretty big following of kids that I was teaching, like in Woodside and Portola Valley, and I taught a ton of lessons. So I was like, okay, like, I can do this. I'm gonna do this as a trainer, right? So had all my one-off lessons that I traveled around to like five different barns and taught all over the place, and I had been doing that for years. And then I opened up shop at a place in Half Moon Bay and started taking horses in training and stuff. So I did that, and I kind of went out on my own, and I did that for quite a while. I had a family where the mom and both of the kids rode. They're big time show jumpers now, but I kind of got them started when they were all little and gave them their first introduction to Pony Club and horses and how you do everything. So they were very supportive of my business and kind of helped me get my business off the ground, and that was great.
What is it about Pony Club that drew you to it for so long?
For me, I never had big aspirations in school. Like, horses were the only thing that I loved from third grade on. Like, I wore my breeches to school every single day. Like, I wore my Pony Club shirt and my Pony Club sweatshirt every single day. I just lived and breathed it. That was all I wanted to do. And so for me, growing up in Pony Club when I was little, like, my big goal in life had been to get my A.
And that is that like the top rating?
Yeah, that's the highest rating in Pony Club. So, you know, I didn't want to go to college and get a degree or anything. I wanted to get my Pony Club A rating. That was the only thing that mattered to me. And I think that Pony Club is just so great. It teaches you so much about horsemanship and the foundation. I mean, the riding is really secondary to everything else. And I feel like that's true. Now having been a professional in this industry for, geez, 20 years now, in my opinion, riding is secondary to horsemanship. And there's so much that goes into keeping these top level horses, and it's not just being a great rider. It's managing the horses, their welfare, their soundness, their well-being, their, you know, there's so much that goes into it. And I really always thought that Pony Club was so important. Like, the first job that I got in England, where I was going to go be the working student, when I called them up to be the working student, they said, "Oh, well, like, what are your qualifications?" And I said, "Well, at that time I wasn't an A, I was either a B or an HA, I don't remember. But I said, I'm a B level Pony Clubber." And they were like, "Oh, great, you're hired." And I was like, I asked them when I got there, I said, "Oh, why did you, you know?" And they said, "Well, because if you're a B level Pony Clubber, you know how to wrap, you know how to medicate, you know how to jog a horse.
You know how to commit.
You know how to clean tack. You know how to tell if a horse is lame." I was like, "Okay, great." So I feel like Pony Club has opened up a lot of those opportunities to me. And I've just always kind of been a little bit of a hustler in the horse industry. And I've realized that, like, I'm not the greatest rider in the world by any means. And I realized at a young age, like, hey, you're not going to get there just by being an amazing rider. But I've gotten there by being the one willing to do anything, saying, "Hey, you need horses hauled? Yep, I got a truck, I got a trailer. I will go down to LAX. I will pick up your horses from quarantine. I will drive all night. I'll be back at 6 a.m. with your horses. Yeah, no problem." You know, or, "Hey, you need these medications given? Sure. Hey, your horse has a swollen knee? Oh, great. Guess what? I know how to do a spider wrap on that knee and get all that swelling out. Yeah, I can sweat wrap your horse. Yeah, I can poultice. I mean, I can do anything," right? And so just being willing and able to do anything has gotten me way further in this industry than having great riding skills.
Yeah, or getting show ribbons.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so I really try to encourage all of my kids to go into Pony Club. I have my own kids now, and my daughter is 6. She's in Pony Club. She has her D1. She just has gone to her first little Pony Club shows, so now I've been roped in all over again. So I am the co-DC of our local Pony Club. And
what is that? What does that mean?
DC, so it's like the district commissioner of the Pony Club. So it's basically like you're the person that oversees everything.
You're in charge.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you kind of said it, but it's probably changed and evolved a lot.
Pony Club?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different from what it used to be. And I haven't been super involved for like the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. We moved from the Bay Area up here to Sacramento about 8 or 9 years ago now. I kind of left, you know, I was really involved in Pony Club in the Bay Area, but haven't been as involved up here. And so in the 8 or 9 years that I haven't been super involved, they've changed a ton of things about the ratings and the certifications and how everything is done. So I'm kind of having to relearn it all over again.
Do you feel like it's a positive change?
I think that it is a necessary change. The way that the world is going, you have to be super inclusive of everybody now, right? Mm-hmm. And so Pony Club was losing members at a rapid pace because it's hard. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of work. The ratings, the certifications are tough. You have to sit down, you have to study, you have to know all kinds of things. And unfortunately, in our world today, horsemanship is really going by the wayside. And, you know, that's the basis of Pony Club. So Pony Club really needed to evolve out of just having eventing. And so now they offer, like we talked about in the beginning, you can just do the horsemanship, you can do the dressage, you can do the hunt seat equitation. So you can still get all of the benefits of the horsemanship part of Pony Club because the curriculum is so methodically set up. It's great. Like if you go through the rating levels, you really learn what you should be learning at that stage about how to care for your horse. So I think Pony Club had to evolve to include all of the sports and keep members in. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And let's see. So when you started your program, did you just go by your name? Did you come up with the business name? Any of that?
I'm called Black Diamond Equestrian. I kind of went back and forth and I thought, well, I don't want to make it my name because at some point if I get married and I want to change my name. So I was like, okay, well, I also want to come up with something that, you know, if you have an assistant or if you were to sell your business to somebody at some point, I just thought that there was a lot more things you could do if you actually had a name and it wasn't just your name. So I had been a ski racer all through until I was in my late high school years. And so Black Diamond is kind of like the, you know,
the hardest one,
right? So I don't know. We came up with that, Black Diamond Equestrian, and kind of stuck with it. And it's been good since then. So
yeah. And what was it like moving from the Bay to Sacramento?
It was hard. So I had kind of a small business in the Bay that I kept myself busy with. And then a friend of mine and I had talked about partnering and making, you know, a large business. And so we partnered in, I don't know, maybe 2011 or something like that. And we created a pretty large business. At one point we had like 40 horses in training and we had an assistant and a barn manager and some grooms and all that kind of stuff. Then he realized that he wanted to slow down a little bit, and he also had an owner at the time that was supporting him with horses. And I was like, this is a little too crazy. Like, I really like giving people personalized attention. Even though we were making money and doing well, I felt like I wasn't giving people the same quality of training and care in my program like I had been before. So I decided that I wanted to downsize a little bit. He decided he wanted to go do his own thing with his owner. I had gotten married at that time, so my husband and I were living in the Bay and we couldn't afford to buy any property in the Bay. So, you know, we decided we were going to look elsewhere. So Sacramento it was. So we decided to move up here, and then he was actually my old business partner, he was going to move to the East Coast. So it was a perfect kind of like, we were all just going to go our separate ways and do our separate things. So yeah, so then we decided to move up to the Sacramento area and kind of start over from scratch. And my husband is a farrier. So he still commutes from Sacramento down to the Bay. Now he's down to just one day a week, but he's got a couple of big barns in Castro Valley and Livermore and stuff like that. So he commutes down and works a little bit there. And then I sort of have been growing my business up here in this area. We've been at a private facility for the last probably 4 years that some clients of mine owned. That was wonderful, but they're daughter went to college and isn't riding anymore, and they sort of wanted to step back. And it was a wonderful facility, but it was a little bit in the middle of nowhere, which kind of for sure hurt my business. So I knew that to keep my business successful, I needed to get a little bit more into town, if you will, where
civilization,
civilization, into commutable distance for people from, you know, the Folsom and Sacramento areas. So we've moved to this new facility, Silver Spur Stables, with Brittany Massey, and we've got a whole new endeavor going here, which is going to be awesome, and we're super excited about it. So
yeah, and are you guys doing kind of your separate training programs, or are you guys combining?
Yeah, no, so we have separate training programs. So she does hunter jumpers and I do eventing. I do some hunter jumpers, but you know, not, I don't travel.
It's not the focus.
Yeah, like we do the local hunter jumper stuff, but I don't travel to any hunter jumper shows. We travel to all of the 3-day events. We're separate businesses, but we run out of the same facility. Brittany actually manages the facility, so I just lease from her, but I've helped her kind of get in and get everything going, and we've sort of took this on together. Like, I knew that I was too small of a business to make a large facility like this work on my own. And the same thing with her, even though she has quite a few horses, you know, this new facility that we've moved to has 70 stalls. And so in order to make, not that we have to fill every single stall, but in order to make the business successful, we need to have the place, you know, somewhat full to make money and make enough to pay all the bills that it costs to run a boarding facility. So we've sort of worked together on that and gotten this place up and running.
How long ago was that you guys moved in?
We just moved in on June 1st.
Okay, so yeah. It's only been a few months now.
Yeah. So a few months and getting everything up. And the facility had never had horses in it before. So it's...
Was everything here?
Yeah, pretty much, except for the footing in the arenas. And we had to build like some turnouts and some fencing and stuff like that.
But like the covered arena was here?
Yeah.
But no horses.
Yeah. The place has been here for a long time with no horses. The new owners were finally willing to allow someone to rent the facility. So
let's see, is there anything within your trajectory that you want to make sure you talk about that has kind of made you who you are?
I think just having a broad background has made me who I am as a trainer. I've done a little bit of everything. So I worked on the quarter horse ranch for many years. They had me learn a lot about natural horsemanship. So I have done all the Pirelli classes and the Pirelli certifications. I studied Clinton Anderson and his stuff when he was first popular and really coming onto the scene with his natural horsemanship. So I really learned a lot about starting horses, giving them a good solid foundation and background from that. And then from riding Western, and then from riding English, and from my 3-day eventing background, and then taking a 10-year hiatus and doing all the show jumping at the top level. And then I ended up getting into dressage. I had an owner who owned a bunch of imported dressage horses that wanted me to ride them. So I ended up like getting my dressage medals and going to dressage championships, you know, and then my pony club background on top of that. Being able to do anything and everything just really makes you a well-rounded horse person. And I feel like the place where my business has sort of taken me, not necessarily intentionally, but is that because I can do a little bit of everything, I really try to find what makes the horse the happiest. And if this horse is really happy doing dressage and doesn't want to jump, well, great. I can train a dressage horse. I can take it to a dressage show and I can sell it as a dressage horse. If this horse really wants to be a hunter and not an event horse, well, great. I know the hunter jumper industry. I can train a hunter. I can take it to a show and I can help sell it as a hunter. You know, if this jumper really wants to be an event horse, well, great. I can take it out eventing and do all that. I've had, like, in my last 5 years, I've really had a lot of people send me horses that are changing disciplines. So I've become a little bit of a expert in helping horses change disciplines. In my barn right now, I have a show jumper from a really top breeding farm around here that they want to make an event horse. I have a 4-year-old dressage horse. I have a nice event horse that with the help of one of Brittany's kids riding it, we're turning into an equitation and metals horse. So, you know, a little bit of anything and everything, right? So
yeah, I think that makes you stand out a bit too. Yeah. Because I don't think that that's kind of a common path.
Yeah, yeah. People tend to have one thing and stick with that. And I feel like then you're a little closed-minded on the horse. You know, if you're only an eventer and you buy these horses, well, I mean, half the horses we end up buying are not, don't want to be an event horse, right? Like, they're too scared of the cross country. They're not bold enough. They don't have a good enough gallop. They're not relaxed enough to score well in the dressage.
They don't like the water.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And so then you have to be able to pivot and say, okay, that doesn't mean that this is a bad horse. This is still a very nice, very valuable horse. It just needs to be in whatever discipline it wants to do. And so, yeah, I think that's served me well in the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's go into the question. So what is something within the community you'd like to see evolve or change? And then how can you help with that if you're not already?
So I'm sure that you probably hear this from most people, but really horsemanship, you know, I feel like the horsemanship just goes by the wayside, and really listening to the horse, like we just talked about, like if the horse is telling you that it doesn't want to be an event horse, just because you're an eventer doesn't mean that you need to make it be an event horse. You know, it can be a hunter and have a fabulous, wonderful life where it's happy for the rest of its life loping around the 2-6 hunters, you know? And I feel like all that's horsemanship. Like, horsemanship is not necessarily just the, you know, ground working and stuff. It's just listening to your horse, communicating with your horse, trying to figure out what your horse wants, how you can meet the horse's needs, how you can make the horse happy. Because if the horse is happy and loves its job, it's going to be a wonderful horse. But if it's unhappy and you're trying to make it do things that it doesn't want to do, it's never going to go as well for you. And I think that how I can change that is just through my clients and through my horses, helping, like we already talked about, just helping the horses find their correct path, helping people find their correct path, and, you know, trying to give my clients the skills, whether it's through Pony Club or just through my own program, just learning to have the skills to take care of a horse no matter what discipline it is, no matter what they're doing, no matter where you are.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like you're definitely living that and emitting that in your program. Yeah. In general. And then you get to ask me one question. Is there a question that comes up?
You interview all different types of people related to horses. What is kind of a common theme that you see amongst horse people that you interview?
I think the most common theme is most of the people I've interviewed, they've had a moment of forgetting why they're doing this, whether it's getting caught up in the hustle, whether it's trying to make a living, and they either keep going and burn out and then come back later, or they leave for an extended period. They don't even burn out. They just like don't want to do it anymore. But I think that's been a pretty common theme that I've noticed, is there's quite a few people that forget why they do this, and then kind of in their later years get reminded and come back either in a different discipline, in a different way, just have horses in their backyard, whatever. But that's been a pretty common theme that I've noticed. But also that, like, and again, the reason why I even do this podcast is we're all human. We're all just trying to get back to that core of what makes us tick. Why do we do this?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a hunter jumper or someone with horses in their backyard or a big time eventing person or clinician, like, we're all doing this because we love horses.
Yeah.
Like, it's so simple. But then, you know, us humans like to make everything super complex.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good question. I haven't been asked that question yet. So, awesome. Well, thank you for chatting with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hello again, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Stable Connections, the podcast. For the first 2 years, I put out episodes every single Monday. Now, they're going to come out kind of sporadically, sometimes every week, sometimes once a month. But if you listen to an episode and enjoy it, please leave a comment, share it with your friends, share it on your story. All of these actions help spread the word. And if you have the time, please leave a review on Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thank you so much. See you next time.